Blog Talk Radio.
Kelly, your host. I'm here with Grant Rubendutz. Hey, Grant.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, and Happy New Year. I've been on a jones for the radio show for the last 2 weeks, and it's so nice to be back with everybody.
Yeah, it's been, we've had the last couple of weeks off for the holidays, and since they fell on Thursday night, or at least the Eves did, so we canceled the shows for those nights and let people get on with their celebrating, and we're back for the new year. I was going to look. I think this is our 90-somethingth show.
Wow.
After almost 2 years we've been doing this. It's show number 95. And with us tonight is Paranexus board member Dr. Ingrid Irwin, EVP researcher, director of EVP research for Paranexus. Hey, Ingrid, welcome back.
Good to be here.
Yeah.
So nice to have you with us tonight, Ingrid.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
it's not
actually tonight. It's day here, yes.
Yeah, she's hailing from Australia, so it's daytime for her, and it's probably not as cold there as it is here.
No, it is 40 degrees as we speak.
That's Celsius for our American friends. So what is that? That's around 100, isn't it? Or a little over 100?
No, yeah, about 110, 116.
Yeah, it's a little warmer than here.
I mean, I'll take it, though. I'll take it over what we have right now in Florida.
We've been freezing our butts off, haven't we, Grant?
Yeah, it's very cold down here.
I mean, it's gotten down to, I don't know, it's gotten down to freezing Fahrenheit,
29 degrees, which is unusual for here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in the daytime, I mean, it doesn't even get any higher than about, what, 50, 55? I mean, I'm freezing my butt off.
Yeah, which is intolerable for us Floridians. I mean, you know, it's not that we don't sympathize with all of our delightful listeners who live in the tundra country. It's just that, you know, give us the heat back.
Yeah. Just, you know.
Send it over.
I've got a simple request. I just want it to be between 72 and 78 degrees year-round. That's it.
There you go. Yeah, that sounds nice.
All right, so we're being told to stop our whining.
Yeah.
Canada, yeah. Or he's got, you know, like 80 feet of snow. All right. So tonight we're going to be talking about EVP research tools and techniques. Ingrid, you've been doing this for a few years now, and just to start off the conversation, you know, what got you into EVP research?
Wow, what got me into EVP research? I think at a time, I think probably before white noise. Actually, I didn't even know about EVP when I actually started. I put a cassette tape on in a room. I had some mad idea one day, and this is going back about 8-9 years ago, to put a tape deck in a room and see what would happen. And I did, and I ended up recording a voice. And that actually started me into EVP. So, and then, of course, with white noise and all those sorts of things that happened in America with AAUVP, that sort of brought the awareness more so to Australia. Because there's not many people over here that are sort of diving into this field.
Well, from talking to you, there's not, the paranormal research, anomalous research is not terribly big, apparently, in Australia.
Yeah, no, it's only probably a handful of us. Australia-wide, really. There's probably lots of people in their homes that we don't know about, maybe dabbling in it, but in the general research side, there would probably only be a couple of us in Australia that are diving into it.
Right. Interesting. So, before we get into the meat of the show, though, if anybody would like to call in and ask questions, you can certainly do that. I'm going to put the call-in number in the chat room. It's also there on your screen, 347-945-7799. If you have a headset on your computer, you can also use that click-to-talk button. And if you have questions for Ingrid, you're more than welcome to call in. You can also type them in the chat room. We'll be happy to take them from there. So,
yeah, for those of you folks out there who don't have a lot of experience but are just starting to do some research on EVPs with your groups, or if you're doing it individually, please feel free to call in and talk to us about us, because we have a real expert with us tonight who's done a lot of research, and you can certainly benefit from what she has to offer.
Yeah. Ingrid joined the Paranexus Board of Directors here a few months ago, and, you know, it's just so great to have her on the board and have her overseeing the EVP research, and she's got so much to bring. So, Ingrid, let's start out. Let's talk about EVPs, electronic voice phenomena. Mm-hmm. You know, in your opinion, from your research, and, you know, how would you characterize EVP? How would you describe it to somebody who didn't know what it was?
It's a big question.
Mm-hmm.
I would describe it as, well, to someone who hasn't been experienced, it really is basically a voice of unknown origin. That would have to be the most basic description, or a voice that is not present in the environment at the time. Keeping in mind that most of the research I do is really aimed at traditional, what we term traditional EVP, where we turn a recorder on in a silent room, preferably with no one present, preferably two recorders, no ambient noise, no white noise, no radios, nothing that could be construed as interference, and then from there we analyse those recordings for voices that just generally should not be there. So it's a little bit different. I know EVP is becoming more technology orientated, but we're still sticking with the really basics.
Yeah, and you know, in talking with you and knowing you, your research, mm-hmm. I mean, just for those people who don't know Ingrid, I mean, she takes the analysis to the nth degree, really. I mean, she's looking for phonetics and articulation, and we're going to get into that. We're going to talk about, and there's
mm-hmm.
a good question in the chat room, when listening to EVPs, what kind of patterns do you notice about them? So, you know, that's really the body of the entire program. So let's start out. When you hear a potential EVP, do you have certain things that you immediately look at in order to establish right off the bat whether more research is required?
Warranted. Well, when I'm listening for an EVP, I've just noticed the question, what kinds of patterns do I notice? On playback, because I'm listening pretty much to silent audio, it's pretty easy to hear a voice. So what's interesting is the pattern of the voices, it's sort of a little hard to explain, but I'll just do my best here. It's almost as if the voice has a further away distorted sound to it, yet the voice is right on the recorder. To go further in to investigate it, then I look at it, I basically look at the spectra of the voice and look at, could there be anything in that voice that tells me it is by human speech? So I'm looking for stops and plosives, I'm looking for anything, pauses between letters and words, anything at all that would tell me that's human. Now, what I found with valid EVPs, what I call a valid or true EVP, the words are literally linked back to back. So the phonemes, there's not even a break between the consonants to vowels. The phonemes are actually all blended together. So we've got a voice, but this is where the interpretation becomes really difficult, because our hearing mechanism isn't set up to listen to this. So we, a lot of the time, can't make out the voice. So it's almost as if I'm really looking to say this cannot be made by human articulation processes. And then if I get that, then I've got something to work with.
Hmm.
That makes sense to everyone.
Okay, so you're looking for signs of what you would identify as a human voice versus a non-human voice. Okay, well, let's talk about that. What what things are you looking for? I mean, what's your typical protocol in analyzing an EVP?
Well, once I've got one and then I've gone through that process, I'm looking for anything at all that would suggest to me, even to the basis where you can look at it and think of the vocal tract itself from the glottis or from your vocal folds right through to your mouth is an actual tube. It's an air-filled tube. So an air-filled tube will always have different formats, just trying to make it easier, or different pitches and different frequencies. Where you notice that with these anomaly voices, they don't have that. They're literally on one pitch, which really is pretty much impossible for us to do. We cannot speak a sentence or even a word without pitch changes. So you'll notice on the spectra, a lot of the times that the actual voice will be sitting exactly on one format. Maybe sometimes a slight lead through onto the second, but rarely, rarely there is. When you start looking at human voice, you've got lots of spectrum. You've got lots of formats. It ranges the whole spectrum. So it's very unlikely. Well, it's nearly impossible, really, for our mechanism to produce a voice on one frequency tone. It just wouldn't happen with our construction. So they're the sort of things that I'm looking for. So really, when I look for an EVP, I'm not looking to say, oh, there's a ghosty voice. I'm actually looking at saying, can this be human? Is this human? And how can I prove it's human? Now, if I can't meet all those criteria, then I have to look outside the box and say, well, how is this possibly not human by origin? And that's really where EVP starts to come into its own.
Okay.
So, Ingrid, I have a question.
Yep.
For some of our folks who just might be beginning to do their own research, why don't you tell them about some of the red flags that you can immediately rule it out as either a natural cause, a cause of the mechanism that you're using, environmental cause. Could you just give our folks some tips on how to like rule out for sure that it's not an EVP?
Okay. Some of the things I'd look for is breath. That's very, and you can probably hear it as we're talking. You'll hear breath, as we use air to produce speech, you will always hear breath on human articulation. Things like stops, like when that S that I just spoke then, very distinguishable word construction. So S's, T's, P's are very, very high frequency consonants. They'll show up straight away. Things like where the words have breaks. Ums and ahs. I've actually heard EVPs that I've said are not EVPs because you can hear a word, then someone goes and sometimes we do that unconsciously. We don't even realise we're doing it. So there's lots of little characteristics you can look for, and the most distinguishable I have to say between human to an EVP would be we always have pauses. Always. There is no, just even a short sentence, there will be slight pauses between syllables. And so if I said the word talking, there is a pause between the K and the I. It's very distinguishable. So you're looking for all the little things that we do as habit. While anonymous speech, EVPs don't do that. The words are literally fully linked together, which is really strange. I can't understand why, but they are.
Well, cool. Let's. We do have a caller on the line, so let's take a second. We'll take the question. Hi, you're on Paranex Universe. What's your first name?
Hi there, my name's Gary from the UK.
Hey, Gary, how are you? This is Doug.
Welcome.
I'm fine,
hi,
I'm
Gary.
Fine, thank you for it. Hello, Ingrid, how are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I'm actually from UK Paranormal Network, and I'm also a lecturer on paranormal equipment. Now, I listen to a lot of shows on blogs or other networks, and they're talking about EVPs, but they never seem to mention infrasound with relation to EVPs. I'd just like to get your take on that, Ingrid.
Infrasound, as in what sort of technology EVP? Are you doing sort of just traditional, or is it more technology-based? Just curious.
Well, just the effects of infrasound in relation to the digital voice recorders. You know, we seem to pick up a lot on digital voice recorders that I don't pick up on the analog. I always have them side by side.
Okay, that's interesting because I haven't tried the analog yet. I've heard a few researchers get some really good comments about getting EVPs on analog actually, but I haven't dived into analog myself.
So is that what you're referring to, Gary, is the the difference into between the digital and the analog as infrasound?
Well, the analog doesn't seem to pick up a lot of the interference. The EVPs on the analog are a lot fewer and farther between. Whereas the, the digital, it seems to pick up a lot of infrasound. Now, that's what the theory goes, that the EVPs happen at exactly the same frequency as infrasound. So I just wondered how much research you'd done into that.
I haven't, no. I haven't gone into sort of the heavy physics of infrasound and that sort of thing. More so what I've done, because I'm just doing digital, which I am going to actually dive into analog and reel-to-reel. We've got them here. We just, time was the factor, just to get the time to actually experiment with them. So that's the next thing. Actually, that's something for this year that we're really hoping to do. But it is a good point, and I know quite a few researchers that are very serious in EVP don't use digital. They only are using analog now, but I really have to go more into that. David Roundtree, I think, also does mainly analog. So I'm going to start talking to him about that too.
Well, the infrasound is the lower frequencies. Is that what you're referring to, Gary, below 20 hertz?
That's right. I mean, there's a lot of research going on over here in the UK at the moment with regards to ultrasound above 20,000 as well. They think that a lot might be happening in that range as well. So it's sort of an ongoing process, if you know what I mean.
It's like out of the typical realm of human hearing.
Well, yeah, because we're basing our hearing from 20 through to 20,000. Well, I think we were even talking about that at Paranexus a week or so ago, where what are we not picking up that's well out of our range?
Yeah. And
you know, we've got to have the technology.
And as I understand it, if these infrasound frequencies below 20 hertz, which we typically can't hear, they have to be sufficiently strong enough, and it's, I don't know, is it more like you feel it almost?
Well, I mean, it's just something to take into account when you're doing EVPs.
Yeah,
are you near traffic? I mean, silly things like, are you near a zoo? Elephants produce infrasound. It sounds silly, but machinery, wind, seismic activity all have to sort of be taken into account. You know? So it's something I just tell people to bear in mind. When they're doing
well,
it.
I think that's an excellent excellent suggestion and something to be looked into myself.
Very much, And that's probably why I tend to do all recording in a closed, locked room with no one in attendance. And I prefer it. I mean, I would like to try that with analog too, which is the next stage. But, yeah, we tend to not take – we're lucky, actually. We live in a remote part of the country, so we don't have anything close by. So we can pretty much control. I mean, you can't control everything, but we do try to control it as much as we can.
That's a good point, Gary. I appreciate you calling in and bringing it up.
No, it's great talking to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks, Gary.
Thanks for your
call. The website.
So nice talking with you.
All right. So we are talking about some of the different things that you do, Ingrid, in your analysis, and you're looking for phonetics. You're looking for words that are either linked together or not linked together, that is, have pauses, which would indicate a more human voice.
Yeah.
What else are – I know that you do some different things with software. You're looking at isolating the frequency, right?
Well, at the moment, my main objective right at this point is that we're doing a lot of work in phonetics, which is looking at the speech construction. There's a lot of guys, like with Gary, that was really interesting, where we can look at how come what's in without the range that we're looking at. My main projection, or what I'm trying to do at this stage, in its early days, is trying to say, okay, how do we know this is not a human voice? And as Gary pointed out also, how do we know it's not a noise? You know, there's so many different variants of noise. And a lot of times we can make noise-like voice that can deceive us a little bit. So with software, I don't do any audio editing of any recording. So with software, all I'm looking for is, why is the spectra of a EVP different to a human voice? Because I think it comes down to that point where we have to distinguish that it isn't constructed by human vocals, and that becomes one of the first starting points for my work.
Well, you know, I've always, you know, all the EVPs I've listened to, you know, some that are real, some that are not, you know, I've always felt that there was a certain cadence about the voice. And that's kind of what you're talking about. It's, in my opinion, it's got a certain cadence. It's got a certain sound to it that once you start listening and you've listened to a bunch of them, you can start picking them apart.
It's almost distinctly not human, or it strikes the mind as distinctly not human. Mm.
Yes, it's definitely got a different rhythm and cadence to it, and it's almost got a non-acoustic structure to it, which sounds a little bit strange, but it's almost a little bit hard to find the words to explain exactly.
It lacks the dimension of a human voice.
Yeah, that's a good description.
It's not created within that flexible tube that you described just a few moments ago.
Yeah, exactly. It does not sound like something coming from human speech organs. And that's really where I've started my work, is where can we distinguish this? I mean, we can look at all sorts of, I love to look outside the box and think about what we could find on different frequencies, but if I can't distinguish it from a human or an environmental noise, then I still don't have something to go on. So I think that's what's really important, to make that distinction between human voice and even in a sense too, we can use that to say, could we pick up stray radio signals? Well, if I'm picking up a radio signal, it's going to be a human voice. I'm going to distinguish that just within a few minutes of listening to it. So we can rule out a lot of things by just trying to distinguish what is human and what is not.
So you made the comment, you've told me this before, that you don't clean up your audios.
Oh, no. Nope. Touch them.
And what's your rationale for that?
Well, if I get something really special one day and I've cleaned it up in any, if I've changed that in any way, I've destructed that evidence. So I do not clean them in any way. I don't filter them. I don't enhance them. Nothing. A lot of the time I can't make an interpretation of them. And if we do try to amplify them, we still can't make an interpretation because of the construction of the actual words. So it comes down to the bottom line is that if we start to tamper with the evidence we've got, then what have we really got?
Yeah.
Not a lot. We've got tampered evidence. We've got to be really, really careful. Exactly. Exactly.
There's no
and I know it's
very whatsoever.
That's right. I know it's very common and I think it's the thing that the EVP community throw out. We need to enhance voices, bring out voices, find voices, and they're all words to me that just mean we're trying to create voices and we're not looking at this research in a proper way, where we should be searching for the oddities in these voices, not trying to create voices.
Well, and that certainly can influence at times, and I will often clean them up, at least to listen to them, not for the final thing, but I want to catch certain things, bring them out. But the interesting thing that we have to contend with is the matrixing or the apophenia, that is, pareidolia effect that we can have even with auditory things.
Exactly.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, it's a hard part. The biggest problem to the EVP is the problem of sharing files with preempted, I hear that Sam or whatever. I think we've got to stop preempting. We've got to stop labeling. If someone's really fed income about what they've got, we cannot label the audio. When I share them with colleagues of mine, I'll just send it through as in voice 1, 2 or trial 8 or whatever. Never, ever do we share what we think we hear, because the moment you've done that, you've clouded everyone else's ideas.
You've contaminated it.
Exactly. So we go back to the evidence is out the window again. interpretation is very difficult. Technically, and it's a double-edged sword, because a good EVP, something that I've found in a handful of them that are not human voice, we cannot make an interpretation of, because it's just not structured to get a good interpretation of. We can guess, and we might come sort of close, but that's about as far as we get. So that's like that double-edged sword, because if we could interpret them, we'd love to know what they say, but that would probably mean if I can interpret it very, very well and I can get 20 other people to say, yes, Ingrid, that is I am Sam, then chances are we've got too much of a human characteristic to it. So it's, you know, I mean, it's a very, it's a sort of walking a fine line between we can interpret it, but we'd love to.
Right. And okay. I was telling you about an audio mm-hmm. that I think you, I know you'd posted it
yeah.
Paranexus, and it was an interesting audio. This is the first time that I've really had a rather surreal pareidolia effect with an audio.
Mm.
And because, you know, I had heard, I don't know if somebody posted or who, where it came from, I'll have to look. But I was listening to it, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, I could make out what whoever said they thought it was to a point. It didn't sound that way completely, but I got what I felt it was, and then I came back to it and got something completely different, a different phrase.
Yeah.
And it was amazing to me because whatever phrase I had in my mind is exactly what it said. And if I switched to the other phrase, the second phrase, that's what it said. And I deliberately, in my mind, played it over and over again, thinking of each phrase in succession. And it was amazing. Yeah. I'm thinking, wow, this is amazing.
You know, the thing that's so interesting about that, Doug, is that you look at here in the States, Ingrid, we have a lot of ghost shows, and because it's very popular. And so what I always found interesting was somebody would be doing, you know, going over their data, and they're doing the EVPs, and somebody would say, okay, now what do you think this is? Or and then all it took was somebody to say the sentence once, and it was like a groupthink. Everybody got the same thing. Nobody thought anything different, because if people were struggling, if somebody said, I think that voice says, I am Sam, you see somebody scratch your head, and they tilt their head a little bit further down, and they go, I hear it. And another person says, yeah, it starts making sense. So it's almost like you want to hear something, and you know, but somebody influences you, because I've listened to EVPs, excuse me, at times, and I haven't been able to make heads or tails out of it. But then if somebody puts a label underneath it and says such and such, then, okay, then I can hear it.
Yes.
And I think it's important to point out, too, Ingrid's research is, shall we say, unconventional to what
probably
many people, many in the community are doing, in that there's a question in the chat room, you know, can you –
yep.
You know, can you edit it or filter the EVP when you take it to a client, you know, if it's really low and distorted? And, you know, I guess that's just a matter of perspective, in my own opinion. It's like what if you take what Ingrid's saying, you know, if you edit it or filter or enhance it, you know, are you introducing artifacts, you know, different things that can distort it, you know, for the sake? And we'll get into the meaningfulness of EVP, but that does have a bearing. You know, I mean, if you can't make out what it is, then of what significant value is it? But we'll talk about that as the show gets going on. And but the thing is that Ingrid conducts a research in her own lab, so to speak, and she's really not going out on location. And I know you've done that at places, but so the interesting thing about this show, about tonight's show, and Ingrid's research, is that it is a bit, I think it's a lot different than what many people are doing in the EVP research community. And I know that Ingrid's taken a lot of flack for it, you know, because she's coming up with different things. You want to talk a little bit about that?
It's funny, actually, because it's probably what I do, is all under controlled circumstances. I don't do any investigation or mix and mingle with people having hauntings or paranormal or anything like that. Though over here, for the few of us that are doing it, that's all we do. We only do controlled recording. I suppose it's everyone to their own. I mean, it would be fun, I suppose, to go out investigating, but I'm looking more at what makes an EVP an EVP. And more so than what are the, you know, looking at the hauntings and that. I guess what I'm looking at also is that, you know, I look at very variety. Could this be a PK response? Now, that gets some EVP people a bit riled or get in trouble for saying that. But I mean, I cannot name the nature. I don't know what the origin is. So, you know, we have to look outside the box and start looking at everything it could be.
And that's
it sure would be funny if the researcher was answering themselves or talking to themselves through an ability that they have that they don't know how to harness, control, or understand.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yeah, and we don't know.
And see, that's what I think is significantly different about your research, is that so many groups and investigators will approach EVP from the standpoint that they are a discarnate voice, you know, an ethereal voice. Before, you know, because that's kind of what we've been almost programmed to think, you know. I mean, over the years with the shows, the TV shows, and just what everybody, you know, the general belief system, we automatically think, oh, well, nobody here said it, so, you know, it must be a ghost or a spirit.
Well, it's pseudoscience. That's real pseudoscience.
Well, it's basically approaching it with a preconceived notion that if we didn't say it, then it must be a ghost. Well, Ingrid is saying we don't know what it is, and she's got a valid point. We don't know what it is. We don't know where it comes from, and that's the point of research.
Hey, that's right. It's, I think the hard part of being in the research side, as I do, is that you end up having to ask those hard questions, and you can't. I can't sit there and say, yes, it is a spirit, because if I sit there and say that, then I've already put biased on my research anyway. So I have to keep my mind completely open to every idea, and I certainly do, and I say that some could be spirit, some could be interdimensional, some could be PK response. I think we could see an array of different EVPs in a sense, I think, but we have to really sort of open our mind and say, but why is it so? And it comes back to that, how do I know what I know? And that's what I get up every morning and ask myself. So I stay research orientated.
Sure, there's so many variables.
Oh,
so many variables. So how do you determine which direction you're going to go to minimize the impact that those variables can have? And, you know, and so, you know, it's not about doing, and that's one of the reasons why we respect your research so much, is you're not going for the big picture. You're going for something you can really hang your hat on, as we like to say here, you know. This is something where you've narrowed it down to one particular area where, you know, you might be able to put the pieces together of the puzzle to really get the results that are significant. So, you know, for those folks in the audience who are just beginning, this is really valuable stuff that you need to really think about and try to, if you embrace it, use it as part of your methodology. You know, at least the approach, the philosophical approach here.
I think too, what I sort of think too, and I suppose in the US you've got a lot more of the paranormal shows now. We don't get really a lot of that over here. So I haven't seen most of that, actually. Lucky me, probably. But
lucky you.
So I'm not sure, clouded by all those sorts of ideas. But I think either way, when we look at EVP, if we can actually look at this in a sense and say, we want to prove this as a separate consciousness to ourselves. That really has to come down. If we're going to say it is a spirit, a ghost, an entity, an interdimensional being, whatever, we have to then look at how can that be proven that it is a completely separate personality and entity than it is to us. And that's where the real nitty-gritty sort of work has to come in, which is what I guess that we, us in the research sort of side of it, have to look at.
Yep, because you can't start out with those preconceived. You basically, like I've said on the show recently, you know, that I've learned recently. I mean, it's just a good way of looking at it. What are the facts, and what are those facts trying to tell us? And so you have to approach EVP with the same thing. What do we got here, and what does it mean? You know, what is it trying to tell us? Rather than stretching out to, well, it's got to be a ghost or a spirit.
Yeah. And a lot of the times, I know both of you will agree with me, the facts just aren't as dramatic as, you know, you see on TV.
Mm-mm.
Facts pretty damn boring at times.
I can tell you, Grant, this the research we do is extremely boring. There's no fun to it. There's nothing at all. It's hours of recording, hours of listening, and then the rest of my time is spent studying acoustics, studying phonetics, studying articulation, and then looking at spectras, going outside and taping noises and voices, and then watching those on spectras. So it's not very exciting.
It's the highlight.
But it's the real work of research where you gotta push up your sleeves and roll up your sleeves and get down there and get your hands dirty with it, because it's something that, you know, you got to have, you got to be dedicated to, and you can't keep your eyes off the prize, so to speak. You really have to keep in mind the principle that you're working for, which is really the one thing that unites all true scientists, you know?
It does, and that's that's contrary to what's shown on these TV shows, where they got the thrills, the high drama, the petty infighting, the sensationalism, just the drama. I mean, that is not what true research is about. I mean, you might have your moments, but they're going to be few and far between, and this is what we need. We need to help educate the community at large that, hey, you know, if we want to really find answers, we got to do the boring, monotonous research at times. And this is the approach that obviously Ingrid's taking. And I wanted to mention too that you know, we're with Paranexus, we're getting into this year a lot more research projects. In fact, projects that the membership can share in. We're going to try to set up some research projects that you know, all the members can share in and contribute to. And we've got a number of different things for ideas. And this is the whole, you know, do we approach it the conventional way that's been around forever and brought us to this brick wall that we can't seem to get past? Or are we going to take a non-conventional approach to it and see if we can't get around that brick wall? In fact, next week, Dave Desjardins is going to be with us, also a Paranexus board member, and you know, his theme is conventional versus non-conventional thoughts on paranormal research. So we'll have an opportunity to explore that, but this is exactly what you're talking about, Ingrid, and that's one of the things that I really appreciated about your approach.
Well, it'd be nice to have more people in the field that we'd like. You know, it seems very, sort of funny to me that it steps on so many toes. You know, I sort of battle against, I know battle, I mean, everyone's opinions are their own, but we have the skeptics on one side in true science that are saying, well, this is, you know, a lot of hooey. And then we have the people in the EVP community that once you say this may not be a spirit, this could be a whole different realm, they get quite upset. So you sort of walk this very fine line in my sort of work, where my main aim is just to look at and find out what we can do to distinguish human voice from this particular EVP voice, and then sort of try and substantiate through observable facts, through data that we're gathering on trials we're doing daily, and see if we can actually make some progress, rather than just sitting there assuming or generalising or just sort of saying, yeah, well, it's all that, and let's, you know, we'll never know what it is, and oh well.
Well,
it's not acceptable for us. We just want to try and get that next step.
Well, it goes to the meaningfulness of it, and that's a big thing that we've been pushing for jeepers nearly a year. You know, I mean, think about it. It's so common in a big portion of the paranormal community, primarily the ghost hunting community. The objective with so many groups is to go out on an investigation, take a bunch of pictures, take some audio, take some video, and look for anomalies. Okay, cool. You know, fine, and hopefully see something. That would be really cool too. But in the end, what does it all mean? I mean, you get your cool picture, you get your cool recording, but what does it tell us? I mean, you only need to get so many pictures and so many EVPs to think, okay, now what? I've gotten a bunch of these. Now what do I do with it?
Mm.
And that's where we're at. That's what we're trying. Mm. That's that brick wall. We're trying to get around that wall and say, okay, what does it mean? Are these voices spirits, ghosts? Are they, you know, interdimensional beings? Are they interdimensional ETs? Are they manifestations of our own mind via PK, psychokinesis? What are they?
Mm.
So meaningfulness, you know, what does it mean?
Yeah, I think that's probably what we do. We tend to think of all the problems we've got. Well, I do. And then I sort of say, well, okay, if it is a PK response, what can I do to either substantiate that or eliminate that? And then I go about setting up, I sit down and journalise it and sit down and do, right, what I want or how can I run a trial that might help. I'm not saying it'll solve the problem, but might help better our understanding. So we run trials. And, I mean, for me, for a trial would be probably 300 or 400 recordings before I would sit down and look at all the data off those recordings and say, okay, what is this presented to me? So, like at the moment, we're looking at doing sleep recordings. When we're in the most unconscious state of sleep, deep at night, that's when our recorders are set to go off for probably about a two-hour period. Then the second trial we're doing every morning is unattended, controlled, unattended trials. So the recorder is away from any living human being. And then we get all this information and slowly correlate it to see if we can find some sort of objective data that tells us something. And then, of course, from there, it just makes me ask more questions and run more trials. So it's a never-ending process.
Weren't you telling me about an EVP?
Yeah.
Nobody was in there but an animal, dog.
Yeah, that was an accident. See, that was sort of like we were talking about the other day, that was sort of meaningful in a sense that I'd accidentally not closed a particular glass door enough that our dog got in. And you can hear the dog, you know, walking across the tiles. You can hear, it's very distinguishable. And you hear him sit down, and then within about 5 seconds, there's a female voice that sounds like it is literally inside the recorder, yet has that long distance, that whisper, that a long distance range show, that actually is said four or five words that I really can't distinguish. And then I thought, and I was actually completely away from the property. We were about an hour away. We were out shopping. So I actually looked at that and thought, well, it's not even being based around a human being. A living physical animal or being within that perimeter still processed something happened there that a voice spoke. So it's not even up to us. They might prefer to talk to my dog than me. I don't know. She might be better conversation.
That's funny.
But, yeah, it just that was one of those one-off weird things that happened that you sort of stood back and said, well, okay, it doesn't even have to do with us. It's an animal in the vicinity. So there was still a living physical animal there.
We were talking also about doing a control, because we've been talking about this, you know, to what extent, and is this even possible that some of these EVPs are being generated by PK on the part of the investigator? Mm-hmm. And so we were talking about a possible experiment. Remember that, where we have two groups? You want to talk about it? You want me to?
Yeah, that was the one we were tossing the ball.
We were talking back and forth, and the gist of it was, what, you know, we haven't developed it, but we'll put it out there. I mean, anybody can do this, and if you do, please share your results. But
definitely,
if you, because we were talking about, I guess Dave and I were talking about haunted versus non-haunted locations, and that doesn't seem to be an issue, you know. So if you were to take select some investigators and take them to and tell them this is a haunted location, somebody died here. Maybe several people died. You know, we just investigate and see what you get. And maybe, you know, build up the story a little bit, really to drive that belief and drive those expectations as hard as you can. Let them do their thing and ask some questions and so forth. Then we take another group of people who are not researchers, not investigators, not even involved. Don't even tell them what's going on. Don't say anything about the building. Give them a recorder and give them a list of questions to ask and see what you get.
I'd be very interested if anyone can ever run some sort of trials like that. I'd really be interested in the data, because what would happen if we gave a recorder to someone who never does an EVP, doesn't know it's all about EVP, no clouded intentions or anything, would they record an EVP?
Yeah.
I mean, that's really interesting stuff to me.
And that would be, it would be great to run that type of an experiment, you know, controlled research. And if Grant would just open up his purse screen strings and give us money, we could, you know, figure something out.
We definitely, yeah. I mean, it would be an interesting trial to run in versus people that are there doing EVP intentionally, and people that are recording that have no intention and don't even know, it's not shrouded by any bias and don't even know that the questions they're asking are anything to do with getting an EVP. I wonder, and it's almost like running an investigation in controlled circumstances in the daylight. I wonder what people would get.
Yeah, it's, you know, that's another thing, and we'll probably hit on that one next week too, you know, daylight
versus
darkness. Yeah. we'll hit on that. But it, you know, you can get past it at any time, and you know, these are the kinds of experiments that we're encouraging, especially among Paranexus membership. And if you're not a Paranexus member yet, you know, come and join us. Go to paranexus.org and join us, because we're trying to do new and different things, and we welcome folks. We welcome.
And you know, the thing that we've been trying to emphasize for a long time, Doug, is the fact that, you know, if you come to our site and you like what you see here, and you're serious about research and you want to do it in the field, and you want to bounce it off other folks, well, you're welcome to come to us, and you know, we'll review your data and your evidence, and you know, we'll give you our honest opinion. But we're here to help, and if you can draw on our expertise, if you know, you don't have to feel. I mean, look, I don't know. You know, we're all folks who are out for the same thing, so. You know, we put our pants on the same way you guys do every morning, one leg at a time. And if we can be assistance to you to you know, build on the foundation or add to the body of whatever we're trying to get, you know, we're here for you.
And the beautiful thing is that we all benefit. So, you know, you might be a seasoned investigator. Great. Come on down.
Yeah.
You know, share in the discussions. We stimulate each other, you know, we brainstorm, you know, it's the mastermind thing where it's the synergy that comes out of it that we wouldn't get otherwise. And, you know, that's true. What Grant says, we want one thing. We want to find answers. It's not about criticizing somebody's, you know, stuff. It's not about, you know, somebody's concept. It's not about that. It's, hey, if you've got something that you think might work, then tell us, and we'll tell you. You know, and it goes back and forth. So,
yeah, and you know, by the same token, though, we're open to criticism, as long as the criticism is not done in a personalized manner, and that you're not attacking somebody. You can, you know, we prefer that it just be presented in an academic manner, or you know, in the most gentlemanly fashion possible. Because we're all trying to have a polite debate here. So, you know, where we, you know, have a little bit of difficulty is when folks, you know, just come and attack in a mean-spirited manner. Somebody, because they have a different idea. And that goes contrary, that's completely contrary to everything that Ingrid, Doug, and I, and everybody who's involved with Paranexus believes in.
And Ingrid, you know, you said you've taken some hits for putting your stuff on. And that's the thing about Paranexus. You can put it out there. Well, you know this already, but others may not. But you can put it out there, and you know, we'll review it. We all do. And then somebody will chime in and say, well, hey, what about this? And you might say, well, gee, I didn't think of that. Let's factor it in. You know, it just goes back and forth that way. And that's the way that we all grow and we all learn. And so with this stuff regarding EVP research, you know, Ingrid's approach is different than what I think we're all typically used to, and I think I find it refreshing. You know, I mean, when she was started talking about phonetics and you know, just the different frequency isolation and why it's you know, like a particular recording might exhibit qualities that are consistent with human speech. Well, cool. You know, now we've got something to measure it by, and that's a good thing. So. What would you recommend that folks do, Ingrid, on if they want to take their EVP research to the next level?
Well, I think that, again, it comes back to as many controls as we can put in. I mean, I'm thinking at the moment of all sorts of controls that I can add into my sessions. So I think it's getting – and I go for – and by the way, I go for good quality recorders. So I go for high-end digital recorders. And patience. I would have to say the number one. I mean, there's so many techniques around for EVP, but my technique is I put it in a controlled situation and turn it on and record. And that's pretty much it.
Are you asking questions at times when you do this?
I have in trials, you know, there's been times where I've thought, well, what if I make, you know, just off the mark sort of comments and things like that. So I always make sure I speak loud and clear and things like that. But I don't actually sit there and ask you know, is there someone here or anything like that. Mine are very general, off-the-cuff sort of comments that I'll make. And, yes, I have had responses to them. So I tend to just like to keep it all really clean in a sense, and I do know once I've done the recording, it goes straight onto the computer within sort of half an hour. I don't leave time gaps because, I mean, I could forget things. Mm-hmm. And, yep, listen to it, do the playback. I play back once. If nothing's distinguishable, I trash it and move on. So I don't go in there and look for anything. If it's mm-hmm. going to be there, it's going to be there, and it's not. And when you're talking about the research, I think that's really interesting because my side of it is very, I look at all the human articulation. That's what I study. So it would be great to get other serious people like, and someone else who might study more very in-depthly the science of the frequencies. You know, we can all sort of group together at what we do well and share that pool of knowledge. And I think that would be a very powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's just nice and basic. Recording. That's all we do.
So, on your when you're in your research,
yeah.
when you have captured a great example of an EVP, what characteristics does it have? I mean, is it a certain frequency range?
Not necessarily. Myself and a few colleagues that do this. I haven't noticed that. All of them are in a particular frequency range. I know some people say they're very low. Some people I've heard are saying very high. I haven't noticed a really great distinguishable fact to that, mainly because what I'm looking at is the structure of the voice. And what I'm looking at is that there is no real structure to these voices. So they're varying. Some of the times I've found them in low frequency. Sometimes I've found them in high. But they generally are always characteristically sitting in this one, what would you almost say, compressed frequency, you might even say. That may be one reason why they have that acoustic weird sort of style and cadence to them. What else did I think? Sometimes even weirdly enough, and in some ways I shouldn't say even weirdly, they hardly even show acoustically. So, which is not really that far off the mark because they shouldn't be acoustic. So, you know, it's sort of, you know what I mean? If the more acoustic they look and the more human-like they look, then, you know, I sort of look at it very simply and say, well, if it looks like a chocolate cake, smells like a chocolate cake, tastes like a chocolate cake, chances are it's a chocolate cake.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
You know,
it makes
sense.
Well, I just have a quick question for you, Ingrid. And bear with me if it sounds weird.
Yeah.
With all of the satellites up there, and all of bear with the noise in the background, because I have a very unruly African parrot that's singing to them. So
okay.
Me. But with all of the satellite communication and intel communication and scrambling of messages and satellite phones, are the characteristics of those voices, can you distinguish what would be a scrambled voice from something that would be completely non-natural?
You can. Yeah, because acoustic, the speech organs themselves, and when you look at all the little characteristics of speech, and I'm talking about when you really get into the phonetics of speech, there's really distinguishable things you can pick out. So even I've been sent recordings that were actually sound, well, pretty much we think were the some sort of radio signal picked up, you can tell that's human.
Mm-hmm.
So
regardless,
you can sit there and analyze. Yeah, you can. You can tell what's coming out of human articulation and speech characteristics.
So, yeah, I hope everybody understands that regardless of whether the voice scrambled or if it's somehow tried to be disguised, it still maintains the same characteristics that distinguish it from something totally unnatural or something that is not generated by a human being.
That's right, because we have got so many of those little characteristics when you really study speech are amazing, and we can't get away from those. So, you know,
Go ahead.
I was going to say the main articulation thing is basically our tongue. Our tongue is constantly tapping and touching all the time. It's changing that airflow. When you really know voice characteristics and you really listen for it, you can start to hear the taps and the clicks that the tongue actually makes.
How hard is it for a digital recorder to pick up a radio signal? Question from the chat room.
Not very hard. I actually heard one of that, and some of them in EVP here would probably know that one. The Panasonic, the DR, was it DR? I've actually heard that one pick up a radio controller, an air flight going over a cemetery, and they picked up the pilot and the radio tower.
I'm pretty sure that the higher quality the recorder is, they're going to have more. And more
security
to prevent that.
Yeah, and the clarity of listening to them, the clarity, like just the other day I was listening to some on the Zoom H2, and the clarity is unbelievable. You can hear a clock ticking 20 feet away. So, it's, you know, if I'm going to pick up a signal, a human signal on that, it's going to be very, very easy to hear it, and then it's going to be very easy to maintain that it is human.
So to reiterate then, some of the things we've talked about tonight, we just were talking about some listen for signs of human vocalization, the phonetics, the can you reiterate that, the tying of the words, the pauses? Or the
So little things to look for would be breath. That's very distinguishable. Little pauses between syllables, because when we change from a vowel to a consonant, our tongue actually, well, it goes that fast, but our tongue actually changes, so you can actually get slight pauses there. You'll get pauses between words. I only heard one this morning that had definite pauses. There's lots of little things. Well, actually, and while we're talking about it, when I do this course for Paranexus, all of this will be in there. So I'll be doing full checklists on human, what to look for a human voice, and then full checklists on what to look for an EVP. So that'll all sort of get down there on paper, which will be really good.
Yeah, and that course is in the works and...
in construction.
Yeah, under development, so we'll be
that's right.
looking forward to that, and so that should be coming out by tomorrow at noon, right?
I don't know about that. No pressure, Doug, thanks. I have been working on it since probably last year, like November, but I would say probably I should have that all together probably March, okay. March to April.
Cool.
So I'm working pretty much, you know, that's my main project at the moment. So that'll go into, I mean, well, this course that we're doing will go far more than just how to record. It really is to look at how can we distinguish these voices. And that's got to be our number one.
And don't forget the matrixing too, folks, when you're looking at these, the pareidolia, you know, if you can come up with different phrases and they all seem to work, then... you know, again, and don't forget the meaningfulness. And what does it mean? Does it tell us anything we don't already know? So, some good stuff. Excellent points, Ingrid. And if Ingrid's posted several things in the Paranexus forums in the EVP section for members, there's I know she submitted an article for the next newsletter coming out on February 1st. She's had articles in the previous newsletter, so you can go to paranexus.org and look at the archives for the newsletter and pick up some more information. Excellent stuff. Look forward to what it all brings us, including some of our research projects. So we're down to about our last minute and a half or so, and we just want to reiterate, we encourage folks to come and join us. Paranexus is a nonprofit corporation for anomalous research. We cover more than just EVP. It's a big part of it. We also cover ufology, abductions, and other anomalous phenomena. So we're not tied to one. Next week, as I had mentioned a little bit earlier, board member Dave Desjardins is going to be with us. Conventional versus non-conventional thoughts on paranormal research. And we do have a little bit of some great news. Dr. Roll, parapsychologist, is going to be joining us again the end of January. I think it's January 28th is the date. It's a couple of weeks or whatever it is from now, 3 weeks. He'll be coming back on the show to talk about quantum entanglement and parapsychology. And that's going to be a great show. So be sure to join us for that show. We appreciate everybody listening to us. Ingrid, thanks so much for joining us again.
Pleasure.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure talking with you, Ingrid. It's always a pleasure. We're so fortunate to have you with us at Paranexus.
I'm fortunate to be a part of Paranexus today.
Yeah, we love you. And board members will be coming on frequently throughout the year and from now on. So look for those and different things that they are talking about. Anyway.
Yeah, we're kind of shifting gears a little bit and trying to give you guys some stuff you can really sink your teeth into.
Yeah. All right, folks, thanks to everybody for listening in. We'll see you next week at the same time, and have a great week. Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Night.
Sky, it's Paranexus Universe.